Are we going to destroy childhood memories here? That is not our goal.
Probably.
Yeah.
Not deliberately, if then. That's a small consolation.
Hi, this is Jason and Mark with Innerman Radio.
A free service to thinkers everywhere, demystifying the Bible by asking the questions your neighborhood pastor is afraid to answer.
Mark, how's your front lawn looking?
Looks all right.
Those tree stumps that you're pulling out, are those from the back?
That's the backyard.
That's the back. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the second episode in our series, Who Is This Jesus Fella Anyway?
Right.
And if you have not heard the first in this series, you really want to go back and listen to it. Because in that first episode, we lay out some groundwork that we're going to be building on this week.
The first episode kind of sets the stage that Jesus really is the center of gravity around which all the rest of the scriptures revolve. And so now we're going to drill down a little bit. If you haven't heard those stories, or if you have heard them, you might be surprised that not everything you heard may have come directly from the Bible.
Right. And we also set the stage as Jesus as a real historical figure.
Yep.
We looked at some of the things that in our culture today, in America, in the 2020s, many of the things that we just take as for granted, actually, Jesus was the originator of many of those principles that we live our lives by, Christian or not, today.
Mm-hmm.
And we also did a general introduction of the Bible and the prophecies that were foretold of Jesus's coming to earth. So definitely check out that first episode.
What does this have to do with my front yard? That's the...
Well, that... Good segue. Yep. So we're going to pick up where we left off in Mark's front yard.
In my front yard, yeah. Right.
Most people today, their introduction to Jesus as a little kid is the nativity scenes they see in people's front yard.
Oh, nuts. Okay.
You see what we did there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you drive it around, you take the kids around to look at the Christmas lights and whatnot, and they see the nativity scene.
Yeah.
And that's most people's introduction to Jesus.
Yeah, that and Hallmark cards.
Yeah. Does anybody mail those anymore?
No.
No.
Sure. So it looks like the traditional scene. You've got usually a thatched roof of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have a manger, which is a nice way of saying a feeding trough.
Yeah.
You need some swaddling clothes, which is some old blankets.
I mean, kind of some ratty looking little blankets-ish.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You need some sheep, a cow if you want to be better than your neighbors, you're probably going to go cow.
That's next level.
It is. But generally, a sheep or maybe two, that takes care of it.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of parents in there. So you got Mary and Joseph.
Yeah, a parent.
Mary's head is usually tilted just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
There might be a halo.
Under the spotlight, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Under the head. And then, now if you really want to go next level with your nativity, you got to have three men dressed kind of in royal type clothing.
The
wise men.
Three kings. So
kings.
Orient we.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. All right.
Orient are
we. And the little boy Jesus asleep on the hay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No crying he makes.
That's exactly. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, we pretty much nailed that one.
Yeah.
It's a great episode.
So that is the introduction to Jesus that many people have.
Yeah.
I think it's similar, you know, at Christmas time, you know. So is that accurate? Let's just start there, first of all. Are we going to destroy childhood memories here? That is not our goal.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like, not deliberately, if then. That's a small consolation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we do want to know, hey, is that an accurate beginning place for Jesus? And the answer is, well, yes, and not entirely.
No halos.
Right.
Right. No. We're not sure if there were animals.
Well, that's true.
There might have been.
Yep, that's possible.
And he was placed in the feeding trough.
That is accurate.
Mentioned that.
Yep.
We call it a manger. It sounds nicer.
Very much.
And those, the wise men.
No. The wise men three, or the wise men how many? So sometimes, it's always, you know, the song tells us it's we three kings of Orient, but actually the Bible doesn't give a number. It just says that they brought three types of gifts. They brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh, but doesn't say exactly how many magi came from the east. Just says that they arrived and those were the things that they brought.
And what passage, if somebody wants to go and look this up, what would be the best passage for them to dig into?
So that can be found in Matthew and chapter 2, from beginning in verse 1 all the way down to about verse 12 is the story of the kings of the east who come, and the wise men of the east, rather, who, the kings thing,
yeah,
who came to Bethlehem in order to see Jesus.
So how about them actually being there at Jesus's birth?
Well, they probably didn't make it. So in some nativity scenes, you're going to see a few shepherds. And those guys actually were there. They had had heard the announcement that evening from angels in the sky, and they went immediately to Bethlehem and found the child as he had been described to them. So the shepherds were there, but when the Magi arrive, they don't find Jesus in the manger. They don't find Jesus in the barn. They find him in the house.
And we're using Magi and kings and wise men synonymously here.
Yes. Okay. And we should be more specific about that. They are called Magi. They're not specifically called kings, or wise men is the translation of Magi. They are men specialized in astrology, medicine, and natural science. So these would have been the learned men, the scholars, than the natural scientists of their day. They're not necessarily kings, though they bring kingly gifts. But whenever they were, they got there too late.
Right.
Because when they show up and they meet, they come into the house in verse 11 of Matthew chapter 2, and they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him, and opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
And we know that that wasn't at Jesus' birth because they're in a house by this time.
They're in a house, right.
Otherwise, they would have been in the barn.
Right. Shepherds have gone by now, but that is how Jesus gets his start.
So that nativity scene that introduced us to the baby Jesus might have elements that aren't all concurrent, historically speaking, but for the most part,
it's not too bad.
Not too bad.
It's not too
bad. Not too bad. So let's pick up from there. So let's talk about Mary and Joseph, okay? So the story takes place during the reign of Augustus Caesar, all right? So
all right,
for those
historical figure.
We know about Roman history, Augustus Caesar plays a pretty large role in Roman history. And this is right about 4 BC.
Yep. So we pick up the story with two young people. They're in love. It's a beautiful story. And Mary is engaged to Joseph, but she hears that her relative, Elizabeth, has become pregnant. Now, Elizabeth is older, so this is a big deal. And so Mary decides that she's going to go, as women will do, and visit her relative, Elizabeth, to encourage her or probably just to be excited with her and share the process.
Now, Elizabeth lives in a region. It's called the hill country of Ephraim.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, hillbilly.
Hillbilly
is in Ephraim. She's there for 6 months, and she comes back with some news for Joseph.
So, honey, I was in the hill country, and there's something that I really need to tell you, but you have to promise not to get mad.
Surprise, I'm pregnant, but it wasn't anybody.
Right.
And it wasn't anybody.
It wasn't anybody.
Don't be mad.
Yeah.
Don't be mad.
It's a God thing.
Yeah.
It's a God thing, and what do you think?
Don't be mad.
Right. And Joseph, to his credit, like, okay, that's going to be a little tough to swallow. Joseph, I don't know that he believes her, because Joseph plans then to set her aside. So what he's going to do is he's going to kind of nullify wedding plans. He's going to set that aside. So he's going to do that quietly because he cares about her, but probably not buying the whole it's a God thing business.
Mm-hmm. So he's then visited by an angel.
Yes.
Who gives him more of the story.
Yeah. So in Matthew chapter 1, when he had considered this, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for that which has been conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son. You will call his name Jesus. It's he who will save his people from their sins. And Joseph, to his credit, is willing not just to continue the relationship and marry her on schedule, but he's also going to take on all of the baggage that entails. Joseph is not the only one who's going to know that Mary came back pregnant after 6 months in the hill country of Ephraim, and Joseph is willing to accept all of that.
In that culture, there was a lot of social ostracization that would have happened there. That would have been the topic of all kinds of conversations behind his back. That could have cost him employment with people, with his carpentry business. Who knows
what
the ramifications would have been, but they certainly, it was not just a little, oh, okay, we're a blended family here, and Joseph is being a good dad.
Right. Yeah, I think even the religious leaders recognize that, because in John chapter 8, they make this kind of sleight of hand comment to Jesus. They say, well, we were not born of fornication. So my guess is that they had done a little snooping around, but the fact that Jesus was not Joseph's biological son, probably not a fact that that they had missed. So, but what it does is it sets up what's going to be true of so many things in Jesus' life. And we get this out of Isaiah chapter 7. Jesus is going to be the fulfillment of so many of the Old Testament prophecies. So all of those Old Testament prophets, they looked ahead and they spoke largely about Jesus. In Isaiah chapter 7, in verse 14, he says, therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin will be with child and bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel. And so even 700 years before Jesus is born, the Bible is setting the stage for Jesus' arrival. And for those who are curious and careful to look, a little bit of an identifier for what they might look for.
Right. So Mary's pregnant, but regardless of pregnancy or not, regardless of marriage status or not, taxes have to get paid.
That's right. Kind of, it doesn't matter. You still got to pay the tax.
That's right. So in their day, in the Roman Empire, being Jews in the Roman Empire, like all subjects of the Roman Empire, they had to pay taxes. And so the Roman Empire taxes by requiring everyone to register for that tax in the city of their birth.
It is amazing, isn't it, what government can do when they are well motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Like the administrative load that this must have been to the Roman Empire is considerable to register everyone. I wonder if it took 87,000 IRS agents to do that job. I'm not sure, but they were well motivated nonetheless.
That's right.
And they did that thing.
Yep.
So that means for Joseph, he has to go back to his ancestral city. And since Joseph is of the larger family of David, that means he has to go to David's city. And that means he has to go to Bethlehem at exactly the wrong time.
Or exactly the right time.
Well,
if you're looking at prophecy.
You are, right. So if you're Mary and Joseph and you're anticipating that this child is going to be born any day, now is not the best time to take a trip to Bethlehem, because they're not going of their own accord. It wasn't like Joseph and Mary said, hey, you know what the Bible says in Micah 5:2 about the Messiah being born in Bethlehem? We really need to get to Bethlehem so that when this kid comes, like, we're on track.
It wasn't that way.
It was not that way.
It was that we have to go register for the tax.
Yep, and they did. And when they got there, sure enough, the days were completed and Mary gives birth.
And that is a fulfillment of that prophecy in Micah chapter 5, verse 2.
Right on schedule.
That the Messiah would come through the town of Bethlehem. So that precedent, it's set, and the Old Testament, there's a lot of Old Testament prophecies, like you alluded to, that will be fulfilled throughout Jesus's life. And it depends on how you count them.
But sure.
Well over 100 prophecies were fulfilled, prophecies from the Old Testament in Jesus's life.
And so you'd think everybody would be excited about that, but it turns out that's not the case. So one guy in particular took exception to this whole Messiah, King of the Jews being born, and that was the ruling king of that particular region. His name was Herod.
Okay, let's just back up for a second. You got a young couple in love. She's pregnant. Why would the king of Herod care anything at all about this? You wouldn't think that that's a political thing.
Right, and he doesn't initially until somebody lets the cat out of the bag, because Herod doesn't know that the Messiah has been born until he gets the visit from these magi from the east. They assume that Herod, the local ruler, must know about this event, since they clearly knew about it in the east. They made the trip here. Certainly Herod must know. And they show up and say, hey, we've come to worship the King of the Jews who has been born. So,
wait, where are you? You're here to worship the what?
Exactly. The King of the Jews.
Wait a minute, I thought I was King of the Jews.
Well,
what
right.
Herod's thinking.
Yeah, but not anymore. At least the Magi don't think so, and they've made the trip to prove the point. So when they announce to Herod that we've come because the King of the Jews has been born, Herod is immediately defensive.
Yeah, that's a problem. Because Herod's interested in staying king. Now, you've got the political structure here. Let's back up one more time. The political structure is you've got Rome. So you've got Augustus Caesar on the throne.
Yeah.
But then he's got these regional kings, so to speak. More than governors, but not Caesar.
Right, right.
And Herod is one of those. And his region encompasses the Jewish people.
Yes. So when Herod hears that the king of the Jews has been born, he takes that as a direct threat to himself. And he creates a little trap. So he says, well, that's fantastic. Really glad. Thanks for telling us. He tells his scribes and scholars, you know, chop, chop, where is the king of the Jews to be born? Because they would anticipate the Old Testament would have that answer. And they were right. They find Micah 5:2 and pass along to the Magi. Oh, yeah, he's going to be born in Bethlehem. Very good. They say, thanks very much. And Herod says, do me a solid. When you find the kid, tell me about it because I would love to come and worship him also. Herod has no intention of worshiping the child. Herod wants to destroy the child before he has a chance to become the king of the Jews. Herod's solution is a simple one. Kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
The wise men leave. They're warned by God, by an angel, not to tell Herod about the child. So they exit the country another way. By the time that Herod finds out that he's been tricked, he figures the only way he can be sure that the child will be exterminated is if he kills them all.
So he goes back and he has all male children of 2 years old and younger slaughtered.
Yes. So everyone in that region, in that space, and it's difficult to tell exactly how large that space is. So the Old Testament is quoted in Matthew chapter 2, verse 17, then that which was spoken through Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled, saying, a voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and she refused to be comforted because they were no more. So Herod makes an attempt to destroy anyone in that region who might grow up to be a threat to him. But what he doesn't know is that Jesus is gone.
Right. They've already left. Joseph, Mary, and Jesus have left, and they've gone to Egypt.
They did.
Because they were warned by an angel in Matthew chapter 2, verses 13 through 15, that gives them a heads up. You need to leave now.
Yeah. The angel warned that Herod is going to try and kill the child, so he gives Joseph specific instructions. You have to grab the child, grab his mother, and you guys have to go, not back home, you have to go to Egypt. You have to completely leave this jurisdiction, so you'll be out of Herod's clutches. And they do that, and they stay there for some time. So there, Herod dies in about 4 AD, and the next Herod takes his place. So that makes Jesus, if he's born about 4 BC, that means Jesus spends about the first 8 years of his life with the Jewish community in Egypt. And he's probably somewhere about 8 years old when Joseph is again told by God that he should move. This time it's come home because Herod, the king who sought the child, is dead.
But this is really another foreshadow or an indication of things to come in Jesus' life and ministry, because that path that he's going to collide with the powers of his day, this isn't the last time that's going to happen in Jesus' life.
Yeah, Herod was right. Herod was right that Jesus was absolutely going to be a threat. Now, it may not be to his political power, but Jesus was certainly going to stir things up and flip things upside down. And they didn't know it exactly what the Lord had in mind or what Jesus would do, but the fact that he would be a significant figure is a tremendous understatement.
So the next time we read about Jesus in his childhood, picking up from there, is when he is about 12 years old. About 4 years later, his family goes to Jerusalem for the annual Passover feast. We can find this in Luke chapter 2, verses 41 through 52. So you've got tens of thousands of Jews coming to Jerusalem through this.
Yeah.
At the end of that, the feast is over. His family packs up their bags. They're heading back in the caravan. Not the Dodge Caravan, but, you know,
right.
Multiple.
Probably a minivan, though.
Yeah.
I mean, most likely, really.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe a Chrysler product.
So they're leaving, and they realize, hey, where's Mary, have you seen Jesus?
No, he was with you.
No, last time I saw him, he was with you. I told you to
watch over him. And
No. Mary's memory would have been much better than Joseph's.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that.
That's because that's exactly why.
Exactly right.
Wives' memories are always better than their husband's. They don't know. They just assumed Jesus is a responsible kid. They assumed he would be in the right place at the right time. And he would be with everybody else who's leaving.
Yeah.
One small problem. He's not there.
No.
Parents' worst nightmare. I always get such a kick out of this because, you know, imagine you're Mary and Joseph, like, we had one job and we've lost the Messiah. It was like, this is not going to go well for us. And, you know, immediately they do an about face and they're already about a day's journey out by the time they realize that they've lost him. And they hightail it back to Jerusalem. And then they're looking around. I mean, the city is huge and there's, like you said, there's tens and tens of thousands of people around. And where do you find one 12-year-old kid?
At the video gaming gallery?
Not this time.
Ice cream shop?
Nope.
Toy store?
Uh-uh.
Bicycle shop?
No.
Bicycle
shop? That's ridiculous.
Outdoorsman's?
Outdoorsman.
Comic books.
Huh.
Where do you think they would find Jesus? They found Jesus in the temple, listening to the teachers in the temple, the rabbis, and asking them questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers were amazed at his answers. So he was asking and answering questions. Now, Mary comes in. They finally find him there. I don't know if that was their first stop. It clearly wasn't their first stop.
No,
I'm looking all over.
Right.
So she's clearly upset. She says, son, why have you treated us this way? And Jesus answers. He says, really? You don't know? You don't know? Didn't you know I needed to be about my... I needed to be in my father's house. He does not throw a preteen tantrum here.
He
submits to them and he goes with them. But he does ask that question. It's an important question that will actually play a huge role in his ministry to come.
Yeah, that's such a significant point because what it points out is that Jesus already has a couple of things that set him apart from the average bear. Number one, Jesus recognizes, and this is really key, Jesus considers himself to be God's son. So he calls God his father. So didn't you know I should be in my father's house? So that implies Jesus already knows about that very special relationship. And secondly, he is independently seeking out what he ought to be doing in order to please his heavenly father. That is going to put him at odds with a number of people throughout his life because Jesus is going to do his father's will, even if that means it's going to be upsetting to his parents, if that means it's going to be upsetting to his friends, to whatever ruling authorities there may be. Jesus' course is already, you can begin to see, his course is already set and beginning to veer off from what might be expected or anticipated.
Right, exactly. Now, the next 18 years of his life are spent increasing in stature between God and man. And we find that in Luke chapter 2, verse 52, where Jesus is increasing in wisdom, stature, and favor among God and man.
So the next 18 years of Jesus are not recorded, but he is busy. He's going through that process of growing and all of the maturing that happens in what relatively is a pretty short time. But the next picture that we see about Jesus, he's 30 years old, and he's introduced by his relative, strangely enough, the son of Elizabeth.
From hillbilly country.
That's right. Yep, exactly. Who we call John the Baptist at the beginning of Jesus' ministry.
And we'll pick up there next time
on Inner Man Radio.
Yeah, thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, you can be sure to never miss an episode by visiting innermanradio.org or get automatic notifications on your phone with the Inner Man Radio app. It's available on Google Play or Apple stores.